Okay, so, we've been getting a lot of questions from you listeners about restaurant benchmarking. And luckily, you've sent in this really interesting guide for 2024. So I thought we'd do a deep dive today into the world of, well, restaurant benchmarking.
Yeah, sounds great. It's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. What I find so fascinating is how it can be applied to any type of restaurant.
Right, it doesn't matter if you're running a Michelin-starred establishment or a cozy little cafe.
Exactly. Benchmarking provides this incredible framework for understanding where you stand in the grand scheme of the culinary world.
It's like holding up a mirror,
Yeah.
but instead of your reflection, you see how your restaurant measures up.
Precisely. It's about comparing your performance, your operations, really every aspect of your business against industry standards or even your direct competitors. But here's the key. It's not just about comparison for the sake of comparison. It's about extracting those golden nuggets of insight. Like imagine discovering that your food costs are higher than the benchmark. Instead of panicking, you can use that as a signal to investigate further. Maybe it's a sourcing issue, or your portion sizes are a bit off, or maybe, just maybe, your menu pricing needs a little tweak.
So it's like a culinary compass helping you navigate the ins and outs of running a successful restaurant.
I love that analogy.
And just like a compass, you can adjust the direction based on the type of benchmarking you're doing. This guide breaks it down into four main types: internal, process, competitive, and industry.
It's like adjusting the focus on a camera lens. You can zoom in on the finer details or pan out to capture the bigger picture.
That's a great way to put it. So let's start with internal benchmarking. What's the gist of this one?
So internal benchmarking is all about comparing different areas within your own restaurant. For instance, let's say your bar consistently brings in more revenue per square foot than your dining area. Why is that? What lessons can you glean from that high-performing space and apply to other areas of your restaurant?
It's like having a star player on your team share their winning strategies.
Exactly.
Now, process benchmarking, that sounds intriguing. This one seems to be all about efficiency, like a well-choreographed dance in the kitchen.
Think of it as streamlining a factory, but instead of widgets, you're producing deliciousness. It's about analyzing workflows, from how quickly tables are cleared and reset to the intricacies of recipe preparation. Are there any bottlenecks slowing things down? Can processes be standardized to enhance consistency?
It's about achieving that seamless, almost effortless flow that you see in Michelin star kitchens.
Precisely.
And speaking of Michelin stars, that brings us to competitive benchmarking. This is where things get really interesting. It's like restaurants are sizing each other up, trying to crack the code of what makes their competition so successful.
It's like a culinary game of chess. While you might not have access to their secret recipes or their profit margins, understanding the competitive landscape is essential. What are the prevailing price points in your area for, say, a signature cocktail or a popular dish? What are customers raving about in online reviews about your competitors?
It's about gathering intel, right?
Exactly. This intelligence allows you to identify areas where you can differentiate yourself, capitalize on opportunities, or simply stay ahead of the game.
Okay, and last but not least, we have industry benchmarking. This one seems like it's all about understanding the larger forces at play, the trends shaping the restaurant industry as a whole.
Exactly. It's about understanding the overall performance standards within your specific segment of the industry. Are you a fine dining restaurant, a casual bistro, a quick service cafe? Each segment has its own set of benchmarks and trends.
It's about finding your place within that ecosystem and using that knowledge to your advantage. So we've explored what restaurant benchmarking is and the different types, but now let's get down to brass tacks. This guide dives deep into specific financial benchmarks that every restaurant owner should know. Let's start with gross profit margin because that seems to be a big one.
Absolutely. Gross profit margin, or GPM, is a crucial indicator of your restaurant's financial health. In essence, it reveals how much profit you're making on each dollar of sales after accounting for the cost of goods sold.
Okay, so it's all about how efficiently you're turning ingredients into revenue.
Exactly. The guide suggests aiming for a healthy GPM of around 70%. Now, I know 70% sounds like a magic number.
It does sound pretty magical.
It does, doesn't it? But it's essential to remember that it's a benchmark, not a one-size-fits-all target. Different restaurant models will naturally have different cost structures. A high-end steakhouse with premium ingredients and a large staff-to-customer ratio will have different financial goals than a casual pizzeria. The real value is in understanding the typical financial performance of similar restaurants, which provides context for your own performance.
It's all about finding your place within that culinary landscape and using that knowledge to your advantage. So gross profit margin, got it. What other financial metrics are we looking at?
Right alongside GPM, you have its close relative, food cost percentage. Think of it as two sides of the same coin. This figure reveals what percentage of your revenue is allocated to purchasing ingredients. The guide suggests aiming for a food cost percentage between 28% and 35%.
Let me see if I understand this. If I'm selling a delicious burger, let's say, for $15, and my food cost percentage is 30%, the ingredients for that burger should ideally cost around $4.50, leaving me with $10.50 before I factor in all my other expenses.
You've got it, and that's where strategic menu pricing comes into play. You need to find that sweet spot between what customers are willing to pay and what ensures you're making a profit.
It's about walking that tightrope.
Right, exactly. Maybe you need to explore alternative ingredients, opting for locally sourced options that are a bit easier on your budget without compromising on flavor.
So you're saying get creative, be resourceful. I like it. It's not just about crunching numbers. It's about understanding how they all relate to the bigger picture of your restaurant's success. Speaking of the bigger picture, the guide also mentions sales per square foot as a key benchmark, especially for restaurants that thrive on volume.
Sales per square foot. Oh, that's a good one. It makes you think about those bustling little cafes that are always packed. They might not have the grandeur of a sprawling fine dining restaurant, but they're probably killing it when it comes to sales per square foot.
They're making the most of every inch of space.
Exactly. It's all about maximizing the use of your available space. Imagine a small cafe with a constant flow of customers grabbing a quick coffee and pastry. They could generate a higher sales per square foot figure than a spacious fine dining restaurant, even if the fine dining restaurant charges significantly more per customer.
Wow, that really changes your perspective on restaurant layouts and how much thought goes into those design choices.
For full-service restaurants, the guide suggests aiming for somewhere between $150 to $250 per square foot, while counter-service places often shoot for a range of $200 to $300. But again, these are just benchmarks. The ideal target will always depend on your specific location, your concept, and your target market.
That's like a tailored suit, right? The
Yeah.
benchmarks provide the framework, but you need to make adjustments to fit your unique needs.
Exactly. Now, we've covered some of the key financial benchmarks, but what about the heart of the restaurant experience, the customer experience?
Yes, because at the end of the day, happy customers are repeat customers.
They're the lifeblood of any successful restaurant.
Exactly. And I think sometimes we can get so caught up in the numbers that we forget about the human element.
It's easy to do, but the guide does a good job of bringing it back to the customer. It highlights a few key metrics for gauging customer satisfaction. One of the most popular ones, which you've probably heard of, is the Net Promoter Score, or NPS, as it's often called.
NPS. Oh, yeah, I've come across that. It's essentially a measure of how likely someone is to recommend your restaurant to others, right?
Exactly. You ask customers how likely they are to recommend your restaurant on a scale of 1 to 10, and while a score above 50 is generally considered positive, the real goal is to aim for constant improvement. Even a small uptick in your NPS can translate to a significant increase in word-of-mouth referrals. And in the age of social media, word of mouth can spread like wildfire.
Speaking of social media, we can't forget about online reviews. They've become the modern-day word of mouth, haven't they?
They really have. And the guide emphasizes that it's not just about the star ratings, but it's also about how you respond to feedback, especially negative feedback.
Because let's be real, even the best restaurants get negative reviews from time to time.
It's inevitable.
It's all about how you handle it, right?
Exactly. Addressing negative reviews publicly and constructively shows potential customers that you genuinely care about their experience and that you're committed to making things right. It's a powerful way to build trust and loyalty, even when you're faced with criticism.
It's about turning a negative into a positive.
I like that. Turning a negative into a positive by demonstrating your dedication to customer satisfaction.
Okay, so we've covered the financial side of things and the ever-important customer experience. What about the behind-the-scenes stuff, the operational efficiency? It feels like an area where benchmarking can really help restaurants streamline their operations.
You're absolutely right. This is where we analyze the smoothness of your restaurant's daily operations. And one of the key metrics we often encounter here is the table turnover rate.
Table turnover rate. That sounds a bit, I don't know, technical for something as human as dining out.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But essentially, it's a measure of how many times a table is used during a specific meal period.
Okay, so if a table is occupied 3 times during dinner service, let's say 6 p.m., 7:30 p.m., and then again at 9 p.m., the turnover rate for that table would be 3.
You've got it.
Okay, that makes sense. But I imagine there's a balance, right? You don't want to be rushing guests out the door, but you also don't want tables sitting empty for long periods. Finding that sweet spot is key.
It's a delicate dance, and the ideal turnover rate really depends on your restaurant's concept, the typical dining duration for your type of cuisine, and even the day of the week. But generally speaking, aiming for around 3 turnovers per table per evening is a good starting point for a typical full-service restaurant.
And I'm guessing there are a lot of factors that can influence that rate, like your reservation system, the efficiency of your service, even the layout of your restaurant.
Oh, absolutely.
And how easily servers can navigate the space.
It's like a perfectly choreographed ballet, with every movement contributing to the overall performance. And that's what makes benchmarking so valuable. It's not about fixating on a single number. It's about understanding how all these different aspects of your business intertwine and influence each other.
Speaking of interconnectedness, the guide also mentions inventory turnover as being crucial for operational efficiency. Tell me more about this one.
So inventory turnover, in a nutshell, measures how quickly you're going through your food and beverage inventory. How often are you ordering new supplies?
So a higher inventory turnover rate means you're going through your ingredients more quickly, which, generally speaking, is a good thing, right? It suggests you're managing your inventory well, minimizing waste, reducing the risk of spoilage.
You're getting it. The guide cites an industry average of around 5 turnovers per year. But again, this can vary greatly depending on your restaurant, the perishability of your ingredients, your ordering practices, all sorts of things.
Right. So a seafood restaurant that prides itself on fresh, seasonal ingredients is going to have a very different inventory turnover rate than, say, a burger joint that relies heavily on shelf-stable ingredients.
Exactly. It's all relative. That's why it's so important to compare your performance to restaurants that are similar to yours, those with similar concepts, cuisines, and size. If you're running a small ramen shop and your inventory turnover rate is closer to, say, 10 or 12, you're probably doing something right. But if it's down around 2 or 3, it might be time to take a closer look at your ordering practices, menu planning, even your storage, to see where you can improve.
At the end of the day, it's about finding that balance, making sure you have enough to meet demand without being wasteful. So we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about financial benchmarks, the customer experience, and back-of-house operations. But something tells me we've only scratched the surface.
Oh, we've just dipped our toes into the world of restaurant benchmarking.
There's always more to uncover, isn't there? I have a feeling we're about to venture into some uncharted territory.
Well, for starters, we haven't even touched upon the tech side of things. This guide dives into how AI and data analytics are revolutionizing the restaurant industry, making it easier than ever to gather and analyze mountains of data.
Okay, now that's what I'm talking about. AI in the kitchen. It sounds futuristic. Let's explore that after a quick break.
Don't go anywhere. This is where it gets really interesting.
You know, it's funny. We're talking about AI in restaurants, but this industry has always felt very, I don't know, old school when it comes to data.
Right. It's fascinating how this industry that's so rooted in tradition and, you know, the craft of cooking is now embracing cutting-edge technology.
Totally. I mean, for the longest time, if you walked into a kitchen, you'd probably see a chef with their notepad, you know, flour dusted, scribbling down orders.
Exactly. But AI is changing all of that. Instead of just those handwritten notes, we're talking about analyzing massive amounts of information.
It's like having a superpower, being able to track not just how many orders of the fish special you sold, but also what people are saying about it online.
Mm-hmm. You can see there's buzz on social media, or if your new dessert is getting rave reviews, even things like the weather and how that might influence walk-ins.
Wow, so you're saying AI can actually connect the dots between all of those things.
That's the idea. The guide mentions these AI tools that can find patterns and insights that humans might miss. Let's say, for example, you see a spike in online orders for your vegan burger every time it rains.
Okay, interesting. I'd probably just chalk that up to coincidence, but AI would dig deeper.
Exactly. It could analyze demographics, see if those customers are ordering anything else on those rainy days. You know, maybe they're also adding on a side of fries or something. Suddenly, you have all this valuable data to inform your marketing, your inventory, even your daily specials.
It's like having a team of digital detectives working behind the scenes to optimize every aspect of your restaurant.
I like that. Digital detectives. And this is especially true when it comes to menu engineering. Imagine using AI to analyze what customers are ordering, what they're saying about it online, and then using that data to predict emerging food trends.
We're talking next-level menu planning. It's like having a crystal ball that tells you what people will be craving before they even know it themselves.
Right. You could even use AI to craft personalized menus tailored to individual customer preferences, dietary restrictions, you name it.
Wow, the possibilities are really quite amazing. It really makes you think, how did restaurants even function before all this data was available? But even with all these advancements in technology, the guide does point out that benchmarking still has its challenges.
It does. And one of the biggest ones is making sure you're comparing apples to apples, you know.
Right, because comparing a fine dining establishment to a fast food chain, that's not going to tell you much.
Exactly. You need to find restaurants that are your true peers, those with similar business models, target markets, even locations. Otherwise, you're just chasing metrics that aren't relevant to you.
You've got to stay in your lane, right? Focus on the benchmarks that actually matter for your restaurant. And let's not forget about the human element, which can be a real wild card in this industry. The guide talks about employee turnover as a major challenge, and I can only imagine how tough it must be to maintain consistency when you have staff coming and going all the time.
It's a huge challenge. High turnover rates make it so hard to maintain those standards, and that impacts everything. Customer satisfaction, table turnover rate, food cost percentage. Even your online reviews can take a hit if the service is inconsistent.
It's like trying to build a house on shifting sand.
Exactly. That's why creating a positive work environment, one that attracts and retains talent, is absolutely crucial.
It's about building a strong foundation for your business, and that starts with your employees. Speaking of strong foundations, this guide has some really interesting real-world examples of restaurants using benchmarking to up their game. There's one about menu pricing that really caught my eye.
Oh, yes, the restaurant that accidentally priced themselves out of business. A cautionary tale, but a good reminder that benchmarking is so important.
Wait, what happened? Did they accidentally use truffles and everything and forget to adjust the prices?
Not quite that glamorous, but it just goes to show how easy it is to make assumptions. They created this amazing new menu, added a few new dishes, and adjusted the prices based on, I don't know, what they thought people would pay.
Okay, so far so good, but.
But when they actually sat down and analyzed their food costs, they realized that some of those new dishes were actually losing them money with every order.
Ouch. That's gotta hurt. Especially in an industry with already thin margins.
It does. And it highlights a common mistake, getting so focused on the creative side of things, creating those enticing dishes, that you forget about the numbers.
So, how did they fix it? Did they have to scrap the whole menu and start over?
Luckily, no. They took a step back and really got into the weeds of their ingredient costs. They broke each dish down, ingredient by ingredient, to see what was driving up their expenses.
It's like forensic accounting for food.
Exactly. And that granular understanding allowed them to make some strategic changes. Maybe they swapped out an expensive imported ingredient for a local alternative that was just as delicious but easier on their budget.
So being smart and resourceful.
Exactly. And sometimes those changes meant having to make tough choices, like slightly increasing prices or adjusting portion sizes. But because they had that benchmarking data to back them up, they could justify those changes to their customers while still protecting their bottom line.
That's such a great example of how benchmarking isn't about blindly following the crowd. It's about empowering yourself with the information you need to make informed decisions for your business. And speaking of which, wasn't there another example, something about a medieval-themed restaurant and their inventory?
Oh, yes. They thought they had everything under control. They were known for their generous portions. You know, big plates of food, fit for a king.
Sounds delicious. What could go wrong?
Well, they were benchmarking their inventory turnover rate against other themed restaurants, but without really considering the specifics of their own menu.
So, even within a niche, there are nuances.
Exactly. It's not enough to just find other themed restaurants.
Sure.
You have to look at those with similar price points, portion sizes, even target demographics to get a true comparison.
Okay, so what happened with the medieval restaurant?
Well, they were comparing themselves to these other themed restaurants and thinking their inventory turnover rate was normal. But when they compared themselves to restaurants with similar menus and average check sizes, they realized their turnover rate was actually quite high.
So they were going through ingredients faster than they should have been, but they were known for those generous portions. Weren't people happy?
They were, and that's the thing, it's a balancing act. Those generous portions were a hit with customers, but their high inventory turnover rate, coupled with the fact that they weren't necessarily turning those ingredients into a proportionate amount of revenue, meant they were probably overportioning, which was leading to food waste and eating into their profits.
Ah, I see. So it's a classic case of what seems like generosity on the surface actually hurting their bottom line. So what did they do? Did they start serving like medieval tapas-sized portions?
Thankfully, no. Instead of drastically changing their portions, they used their data to make strategic adjustments. They identified the dishes that were most popular, the ones where people were consistently leaving food on their plates, and then they made some subtle tweaks to the portion sizes.
So finding that sweet spot where customers still feel like they're getting a hearty meal, but without the unnecessary waste.
Exactly. It's about optimization, not deprivation. And the results speak for themselves. They reduced their food waste, improved their inventory turnover rate, and they didn't have to compromise on the quality or the spirit of their medieval theme.
That's awesome. They found a way to stay true to their concept while making smart, data-driven decisions.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of benchmarking. It can be applied to so many different facets of running a restaurant, from menu pricing and customer experience to back-of-house operations and your overall financial health.
It's like having a toolbox full of data-driven solutions.
Right. And what's really exciting is that this field is constantly evolving as new technologies emerge and new data becomes available.
It's like the culinary world is constantly being infused with new flavors, new possibilities. So if a medieval-themed restaurant can benefit from data-driven decision-making, then really the sky's the limit for everyone else.
I love that energy. But before we get too carried away with the possibilities, it's important to remember that benchmarking is just that, a tool. It's not a magic solution, and it shouldn't be used in isolation.
So it's not enough to just know the numbers. You have to understand what they mean, right?
Exactly. It's about using those numbers within the context of your restaurant, your target market, your overall vision.
You have to use both your head and your heart, combine those data-driven insights with your intuition and passion.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's like what we were saying earlier about those chefs who can take the same ingredients and create something magical. It's about more than just following a recipe.
So where do we go from here? What's the main takeaway from all of this?
The big takeaway is that benchmarking isn't about copying what everyone else is doing or trying to force your restaurant into some kind of predetermined mold. Mm. It's about using data as a tool for self-discovery, for continuous improvement.
It's about understanding where you stand and then using that knowledge to make your restaurant the best it can be.
Exactly. But you know what I find particularly interesting after diving into all this?
What's that? You've got me on the edge of my seat.
Yeah.
Okay, you've got me on the edge of my seat. What's got you so intrigued?
Well, it's this thought, you know, if every restaurant has access to all this data now, those benchmarks, those insights, what really separates the great ones from the rest?
I see what you're getting at. It's not enough to just know the numbers. It's how you use them.
Exactly. It's like you can give two chefs the same ingredients, the same recipe, even the same kitchen, but one of them, well, they create a dish that's just pure magic, and the other one, well, let's just say it's edible.
So what's that magic ingredient? What's the X factor that elevates a restaurant from, you know, good to extraordinary?
It's a combination of things, really.
Yeah.
Yes, knowing your food costs is important, but are you willing to go above and beyond to source that one-of-a-kind ingredient, even if it means exceeding your benchmark? Can you create an experience that's so unique, so memorable, that people are happy to pay a premium for it?
So it's about taking risks, thinking outside the box, trusting your gut.
Absolutely. Mm. And we can't forget about the importance of hospitality. Two restaurants can have identical table turnover rates, but one might feel warm and inviting, you know, where the service is seamless, and the other feels rushed, impersonal.
It's all about the feeling, that intangible something that makes you want to come back for more.
Exactly. It's the warmth of the greeting, the ambiance, the story you're telling through your food, your decor. The benchmarks can guide you, but they can't create that magic.
That's such a good point. Data can tell you what people are doing, but it can't always tell you why. And that why, that emotional connection, that's where the real magic happens.
I couldn't agree more. It's those intangible elements that turn a meal into an experience. The next time you go out to eat, pay attention to those little things. What makes it memorable? Is it the way the server remembers your order, the music playing in the background, or maybe it's just the lighting that makes everyone look amazing?
It's about creating a feeling, that sense of I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Exactly. And that's something that no amount of benchmarking can replicate. It comes from the heart.
You've given us so much to think about today. So to wrap things up, benchmarking is this incredibly valuable tool for understanding your restaurant, seeing where you can improve, and making those tough decisions. But it's not the be-all and end-all. It's most powerful when you combine it with your own creativity, your intuition, and your passion for the business.
Well said. It's about finding that balance between the art and science of running a successful restaurant.
And on that note, we'll wrap things up for today. Until next time, may your restaurants be filled with delicious food, happy customers, and those data-driven insights that help you thrive.